two-point game.
Well, here's your mismatch right here.
Now it's Luka. Deep three over four. Luka Magic.
Take time with you.
Welcome back to 77 Minutes in Heaven, the Mavericks podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network. Brian Damaris here with Mark Folliwell, and we're recording this after another just amazingly exhausting Mavs game against the Blazers when they lose 134-131. Three of the seven games have gone to OT, and this one obviously could have.
Three of the seven games have gone to overtime, Brian, and two others have ended with Tim Hardaway Jr. shots at the buzzer, one to win against Phoenix and one to tie in tonight's game against Portland. The only games that didn't, like, let's see. So the Utah game did, you know, the Mavericks pulled away and beat Utah, and then the Clippers pulled away and beat the Mavs. You know, those are the only games that weren't in the balance in the final minute. Unbelievable.
Well, let's talk about this Blazers game since it's top of mind.
Yeah.
And there's some talking points there at the end.
Oh my gosh.
Let's first just go right to the controversy. The Trey Burke foul there at the very end. When Finney Smith hit the three that was taken away. Your thoughts on the call?
Seen it happen actually quite a bit in games involving the Mavs in the bubble, and it's happened for the Mavs, it's happened against the Mavs, where a player makes a pass, kind of leaves a ball for a player, and then just carries on through, and his momentum takes him into another player and wipes out another player. I mean, you can't run a guy over, and that's basically what he did. I mean, I almost made a reference to the fact that it almost looked like he was blocking for somebody in football, the way he lowered his shoulder into Damian Lillard.
Yeah, so our friend, the editor of The Athletic, Orm Royale, said, that looked like an NBA play, and I replied, that looked like an NFL play.
I don't think there's any.
I've watched the replay several times. I even got into it with Donovan, our good friend Greg Donovan from The Ticket, who I think he was trying to say it wasn't a charge, but that's not the call. It was just a, I don't even know what the call is. The official playbook had it as offensive foul, but it's a, you just can't plow over a guy.
Right.
And I think Rick alluded that his coaches on the iPads, you know, they didn't have a challenge because they had just used it on the Porzingis call. We'll get to that in a sec, but looked like he flopped. I just don't think that would have been overturned.
I would concur with that. I don't think that would have been overturned.
No. So
I had hopes the Porzingis play was going to be overturned until they showed the replay from behind, and then that's when you could see that he had a handful of Gary Trent Jr.'s jersey on the play that fouled out Porzingis.
Yeah, so I think, you know, as much as homers we are, we kind of have to say that wasn't – I just think that was called correctly, as much as we probably don't want it to be, it was.
No, I think if you're going to be upset, and I think you could tell whenever you saw how much Rick was swearing at the time, when you could read his lips in the fourth quarter, whenever there were a couple of fouls that put Lillard on the line, you know, I think one of them involving Tim Hardaway Jr., where he's basically like got his hands behind his back.
So he's going through the screen. He's got his hands behind his back. Now, it was a two-shot foul because his, you know, his foot was on the line. You can't – I understand the idea that he was, you know, bumping around like a pinball in there, even if his hands were behind his back. I can kind of see that, but it did seem like a silly foul.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, the bottom line is the guy scored 61 points, and we should not, overlook the fact that this was a career-high tying game for Lillard. He had 61 in a game earlier this year against Golden State. The guy's had three 60-plus point games this year, which makes Lillard and Wilt Chamberlain the only people in NBA history to do that. And if he had made one more shot at the end, which at one point I thought he was about to, it's the second most points ever scored in a game against the Mavs. Kobe had 62 on December the 20th, 2005. The infamous game where at the end of the third quarter, the score was 95-61, Lakers over the Mavs, when Kobe had 62 points and the Mavs only had 61.
Wow.
At the end of the third quarter. So that's the most points scored in the Mavs, against the Mavs, that is. And then tonight was the second most. Damian Lillard, 61 points. And this is not like the old days where I have a box score that since we're not on site, but I believe it was 18 of 18 at the free throw line. Does that sound right to you, Brian? 18 of 18 at the line?
I don't know off the top of my head, but he did go. I know Finney Smith fouled him twice on three-point attempts. And we talked about the Hardaway one that was almost a three-point attempt. I don't look at this like the Houston game. I'm not disappointed that they lost another clutch game. They got beat by a guy who was just going off.
Yeah, a guy who went for 61. Oh, my goodness.
Now, I do take issue with the way he was defended. I probably would have trapped at half court and just gotten the ball out of his hands, especially in the fourth.
Yeah.
Especially when you saw, I mean, he went off for what, nine straight? It was in, when was that run where he was just hitting three after three? Was that the beginning of the fourth or end of the third?
That was in the third. Yeah. That was the run. Yeah. So, yeah, he went for 22 in the fourth, by the way.
Points. So yeah. I did have some issue. I mean, listen, they were just abusing Porzingis on the pick and roll. Porzingis was, and it had to be the way they were coached. He was staying back. And, you know, if you do that to Dame, he's just going to hit those threes. I mean, his range is so big. We saw on that really long one that he hit. So I don't think that was a smart strategy. You know, you want Porzingis in there, so you're not going to pull him out because he's just getting abused in the pick and roll. But you've got to trap the guy and get the ball in his hands before he's even in that position. So I didn't really like the strategy on him defensively because I'd much rather have Melo or Collins or any of these other guys try to beat us.
Great, especially Trent. McCollum, who was playing really poorly tonight. McCollum was 2-for-14 from the floor.
So you want to take advantage of that. And I had a little bit of question with that. But, yeah, you know, the you knew it was his night, especially at the end when he hit that crazy shot that bounced high off the back of the rim and went in.
I call that on the broadcast the Don Nelson bounce, and that's probably that's way too old of a reference for a lot of people. But in Game 7 of the 1969 NBA Finals, Brian, like in the last minute of the game, Don Nelson, while playing for the Celtics, hit a shot like that basically sealed the game, that went off the rim and went way up in the air like that and down and sealed the game for Boston. So that's kind of a That's a noteworthy shot in NBA history if you're up on your 1969 NBA Finals. So that's why I call it the Don Nelson bounce.
Dirk's game-winning shot in MSG years ago.
Yeah.
Over Melo, actually.
Yep.
It didn't bounce nearly as high, but did have that kind of bounce as well. So, you know, listen, I mean, we can, like I say, I'm not discouraged by this. I think it wasn't like the clutch time offense just failed them. And, you know, their defense isn't great. That's what this team is. It's an average defense.
Yeah, they're 18th, 17th, 18th. Let me look at my notes here. Going into this game tonight, the Mavs were 18th in the league
so
in defensive
rating.
So they've
gone down from 17th pre-bubble to
18th now.
And
obviously it took a little bit more of a hit tonight. We'll see if it actually cost him a spot in the standings. But here's what I would say, Brian, that I was disappointed about, and in comparison to the Milwaukee game on Saturday. When Luka got fouled in an important situation Saturday against Milwaukee, down 2 with 21 seconds to go, he made both free throws. And tonight when he got fouled in an important situation, I believe it was with 40 seconds to go, right? And he went one for two. Yeah, went one for two.
Now, again, it didn't matter. I mean, maybe that last play, you know, you're not having to do a three, but, you know, it didn't really matter. But, yes, I mean, in the clutch, you want him to hit those shots. I was a little also to, you know, pick at Rick a little. I probably would have had Kleba in there more in the fourth down the stretch than Burke, just because they play big and they've got Collins and Nurkic. And so, we got killed on the boards tonight. And I would have liked to have seen Kleba, who, you know, was playing a feisty game and playing pretty decently in there. And he finally did get the switch in with like about 3 minutes or so to go. But and it was actually when and then obviously stayed in once Porzingis got out. But I would have liked to have seen him more in there.
How about the...
I'm a fan of your five best players on the court.
And
Kleba is, with Seth out, we basically have five guys that I would rely on. And, you know, giving these key minutes and tons of them, I don't know how many Burke had tonight, to a guy we signed on July 1st, you know, who's a journeyman... I understand the idea.
Burke played 31 minutes tonight, by the way, Brian.
Of being small and playing like that. I just think that, especially against this team that is bigger, I would have had Kleba in there.
You know, the one thing you would say on offense, as we're kind of kicking this around, is that if he doesn't commit the offensive foul, then he's created a shot that could have won the game for you because of his baseline drive and kick out to Finney. So that is, let's face it, that's the one thing that we've been clamoring for, is that at the end of games, to help the clutch time offense, Luka does need another playmaker on the floor. So if you take him out and you play bigger and you've got somebody who's a little bit better three-point shooter in Kleba, then the downside to that is then all the playmaking and all the shot creating falls on the shoulders of Luka at that point.
And in that possession, you notice they, you know, it was at 10 seconds left on the shot clock. It was, Luka was double teamed way by the Black Lives Matter logo. So he had nothing going and he had to kind of create to make something happen. So you're right. I mean, it was good. Somebody was cutting inside and making something happen rather than just having four guys, you know, around the 3-point line.
But, we saw a lot in the fourth quarter in an attempt to slow down Lillard. How about the fact that we saw a lot of Michael Kidd-Gilchrist in the fourth quarter?
And he scored.
Yeah, with a nice move driving to the basket.
As
I said at the time on the telecast, to give him 6 points and 98 minutes played with Dallas in the time that he's been with the Mavs and the 12 games that he's been on the floor.
First points since February, and I think that was nice to see after stepping out of bounds, I think, the first time he touched the ball.
Yeah. He actually was pretty good in the game against Utah on Monday afternoon in the second half when Dallas came back and won the game. He had noted on the telecast tonight the best plus minus of a player who didn't take a shot in a game this season when he was a plus 21 in 18 minutes without attempting a single shot. And Dallas has come back winning against Utah on Monday.
Jason Kidd in the 08 Olympics when he went through the entire gold medal and did not attempt a shot.
That's unbelievable.
But I guess, you know, listen, we're this game, obviously, I guess the larger, you know, point we should make off the top here is that the Mavs are locked in at the 7th seed.
That is the best point to make.
They had to win out to even have a chance of moving up and then hope for either a Utah loss or a pair of Oklahoma City losses.
And I think a Utah loss to San Antonio was imminently possible, obviously, on Thursday. So, I mean, it was something that was legit in play. The issue would have been, Brian, had the Mavericks won this game tonight, then Phoenix is playing to go into the playoffs.
Yes, they're playing for their lives.
Yeah, Phoenix needs help now on Thursday. They would have controlled their own destiny and the way they're playing, it would have been.
Yeah, and you're going to get into all those scenarios here in a sec, but I think the good thing to take away is that this was the most important game of Portland's season.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because if they had lost, they would be 11th, and now they're in 8th.
Right.
And they're in the driver's seat. They control their own destiny. The Mavs, you could say they had something to play for, but not really. I mean, obviously, by sitting everybody yesterday and or Monday and against Utah and the way they're handling it, they weren't going balls out. I mean, they're playing hard, but Portland had everything at stake and they still played them really close and really tight.
Portland's life depended on this game, in essence.
So I would expect Thursday that you're going to see, I think I wouldn't expect Luka and KP not to play at all, but if they played more than 20 minutes, I would be shocked.
I concur with that. Yep. I agree with that.
Then our eyes point to the 2 seed, and what are the scenarios there?
Maybe Luka and KP play into the middle of the third quarter. Well, I don't know. They might not even play the second half. I guess it depends.
It may be similar to what I saw Denver do Monday night, which was, I think, Jokic played 16 minutes and, just something like that.
I mean, on Monday afternoon, we saw the Mavs play Utah and Quinn Snyder played as starters in the first half and didn't play them at all in the second half. I thought, my read on that Thursday will be, let's see how the starters play in the first half. If they play poorly, Rick might put them on the floor for the first 6 minutes of the third quarter. I think a lot of how much they play will be dictated on the first half. If the starting group has a good first half, there's no reason to put them on the floor to start the second half. If they have a poor first half, I can envision Rick saying, okay, you guys go out and play a good first 6 minutes of the third quarter to end the seeding games on a good note for you collectively as a unit, and then you guys will be done the rest of the day.
Right.
That sounds like something you know Rick well. I mean, that sounds like something he would do.
I also think that the Utah game was really important to get everybody else, good run.
Yes, absolutely.
And getting them on. I mean, Seth had a good game. Hardaway, just psychologically seeing the ball go in the bucket.
Yes, absolutely.
Is important. And all those guys played well. They weren't, it's just a different game when you don't have KP and Luka and Finney Smith in there. So they're getting more touches. They're getting in rhythm. you never know when you're going to need contributions from some of these players. So I think it's valuable that we had that game. And I think Thursday, as much as you don't want a guy to sit from Tuesday till Monday or Tuesday, a full week without playing, they're going to play some, the big guys. Mm-hmm. You're going to want those second tier guys to get some more run.
Yeah, I think that before we get into the second seed stuff, I do think you bring up a very, very good point about Monday's game. We know how hard it's going to be for the Mavs against whomever they play, especially if it's the Clippers, whom it's most likely going to be, as we'll lay out here in a second. But there's no discussion, there's no hope, there's no possibility, period, if Hardaway and Curry are in the slumps that they were in going into the Utah game. The Mavs, I mean, look, the Mavs were 2-3 in the bubble at that point. And that was with, a win over Sacramento, where Sacramento totally petered out at the end. Now, they did have a good performance against Milwaukee, despite the fact that it was off nights for Hardaway and Curry. But it took, you know, Luka's.
Sacramento's fallen below, you know, they're last in the West now.
And it took
in the bubble teams.
And it took, and it took an historic performance by Luka. So going into that Utah game, Curry and Hardaway were both shooting approximately 32%. From the floor. And you and I both know, and any MFFL who's watched the team closely knows, that they don't have any chance in the uphill battle they're already going to be in. There's no chance if Hardaway and Curry shoot 32% over a long stretch of a series. So they had to get those guys going. And Hardaway followed up that game with another good game tonight against Portland. Curry didn't play because there's still some right leg soreness there. And that's
I think it was a playoff game, you know. We're
could have played
about something different.
Sure. But it was really important for those guys to play well Monday in that game against Utah.
And
so
just
that
get
was,
run for JJ and everybody else. You just never know, you know, what you may need from some of those other guys.
Before we preview the number two seed positioning, do you have anything to say about the Milwaukee performance by Luka on Saturday night?
I mean, listen, you know, to follow up a 30-20-10 where the 20 was rebounds, with now basically almost getting one, but flipped where it's assists. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
And I really think because it was on national TV, nothing else was going on. It was the Bucks. All eyes nationally were on it. You know, I think it was the best game of Luka's career.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was as much as, if you remember the Houston game where he scored, I think, 10 or 11 points at the end.
Yeah, 11 points in a row. Yeah.
That kind of got everybody's gaze on, oh, this guy's something special. This guy could win the MVP next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would be shocked if he wasn't fourth on it this year, even though the voting has been done well before that game.
As a matter of fact, yeah, bubble games don't count towards postseason
right. Awards.
They're going to do their own special bubble awards,
that's
as a matter
right.
of fact.
And I think Damian Lillard just locked up MVP of the bubble. I think the only awards are MVP of the bubble and all bubble team.
First and second. Yeah. Okay. They're going to honor 10 players, all first team and all second team seeding games.
And
yeah. And Luka and KP will be on it.
Sure.
Yeah, they've been. Don't you think
they're the best duo in the league? And yeah. I think they will probably want to skew towards the TJ Warrens of the world, who, you know, are playing great and don't probably get a lot of recognition.
Right.
But yeah, there's no reason. I mean, Luka doing what he did just in those two games.
Yeah.
But I know you tweeted this. Is it still true? Because you told me Basketball Reference sometimes is a little wonky with older stats. The Milwaukee stat line has never happened in the NBA?
That is correct. So Elias Sports Bureau confirmed that for the Mavs Sunday morning. I got a follow-up email that there has never been a player in NBA history in a game score at least 36 points, dish out at least 19 assists, and pull down at least 14 rebounds. That's never been done before in NBA
history. Because obviously,
history.
If you're doing that many assists, you're usually a Steve Nash or a Jason Kidd who, while Kidd was a good rebounder, I mean, they're usually not getting that many rebounds.
Right.
Luka's very special in that regard. The all-time assist in a game leaders, you mentioned this to me on the phone, are who?
In Mavs history?
Yes.
Are Jason Kidd with 25 and Steve Nash had 20. And I think that Luka is now tied for third most in Mavs history. I believe that Derek Harper had a 19 assist game for his career high. And Nash and Kidd also had some 18 assist games as well.
So yeah, I mean, just, you know, And again, another good game in that they're playing a team that was playing everybody. And, you know, it's the Bucks, and I wish we could play the Bucks all the time. We're 2-0 against them this year. I think we gave them two of their 16 losses.
You're exactly right. Yeah.
But, and of course, the first one was without Luka in Milwaukee. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, what can you say about that game in particular? And I think, like I was saying, the national media now, I think, is saying, all right, you know, guaranteed first team all NBA. And I was even seeing on the jump where, you know, I agree with this. I think he is in, you know, maybe even the favorite to win MVP next year.
Wow.
Because, you know, you got to think, okay, is Giannis, do they want to give it to Giannis a third time?
Right.
You know, LeBron maybe isn't so special. He's playing with AD. You know, Harden's always going to be in that discussion, but who else is going to really challenge at that level? I think the line at MVP stops at four in this year.
Right.
And so, you know, you have your ADs or Dames or Chris Pauls that you could throw in that mix at five, but it's amazing. And, you know, there's an argument about most improved player. I think the spirit of the rule isn't to give it to a guy who was picked third, who was rookie of the year.
Right.
But there is an argument to be made that being fourth in the MVP voting and first team all NBA and, you know, and basically being a 29-9-9 guy,
right,
almost 29-10-9 guy,
yep,
is pretty remarkable.
He's going to be the only player in the league to be in the top 20 in points per game, rebounds per game, and assists per game, which is something that doesn't happen very often. Russell Westbrook does that, you know, has done that kind of thing in the past few years, and that's about it.
You know, Russell Westbrook got it simply because he got a triple-double for the season a few years ago. I mean, he's almost a 30-10-10.
I know.
That's amazing.
It is absolutely incredible. And he's had some, I mean, he's had some very, very special bubble performances. That's some lofty expectation to put on a guy who's going to turn 22 during the upcoming season to go into it as an actual MVP, not only just candidate, but I mean, people are putting that out there talking about favorite. That is a sign that something really special is happening here in Dallas, and he's obviously gotten the attention of everybody around the league.
I liked a tweet from Dave Lane tonight, our friend from the Ticket, Gen X Davey, who said, you know, if you're really complaining about the free throw that he missed, then you probably complained to Jesus about the kind of wine he made.
There's a point to be made there for sure.
And, you know, listen, he's got the team and he's the point guard on the team have clutch issues to work through. What is his free throw percentage this year now?
75.5% for the year going into play.
If he got 80, we'd be happy, right? So that's not a huge ask.
Right.
And listen, if he can improve his free throw, his 3-point shooting, kind of like Dodo did, he's unstoppable.
That's the thing that surprised me is the fact that we're going to look at 2 years running now that he's basically going to shoot between 31% and 32%.
What did he shoot on threes in his last couple of years in Europe?
Well, it's interesting you ask me that because he went down in, I think, as he took more shots, he probably took harder threes, more closely guarded threes, and the percentage went down. So his first year with Real Madrid, where he was getting any playing time with the first team, he was like a 38-39% 3-point shooter. Then it dropped to 35, then it dropped down to about 31 or 32 as he took more threes.
And then their line is the same?
Is no, their line is shorter. It's 20 feet,
so
6 inches.
Something.
Yeah.
And also, you know, has been well documented in the spring of the year he was drafted, he had played almost a full year and was just tired.
Yeah.
And so his legs were probably giving out as well.
Yep. Yep.
But listen, I don't know. I'm sure he can find a way to bump that up even a couple percentage points. But yeah, you know, listen,
league average is 35, Brian. I mean, ideally, if you
right.
can get it up
and
to
he's
that.
He's 31, 32, something like that. I think if you look at the trend of this team, you know, last week when we did this, we were, you know, in a pretty bad way about the clutch issues. And
right.
We can get a little, you know, it's a small sample size. As we talked about, the bubble environment seems like a playoffs because we're analyzing every game so closely. But if you look at the last four games, you know, they did play well in the clutch against Sacramento. Sacramento's not a great team, but they did do what they need to do to win that game.
Yes, correct. Including defense.
You know, the Clippers are the best team in the league, in my opinion. And they, you know, they lost by 15 again, like they did earlier in the season. It was single digits for a lot of the time, usually 8, 7, 8, 9 points. But you're listen, they're better than us, and so you're going to lose that game. But you know, they acquitted themselves well, and then we talk about the Bucks game, and obviously the game Tuesday night. So, like I said, going about this game against the Blazers, it wasn't a choke job. It wasn't like they just, there's obvious things that you're pointing at. You know, yes, there's a, you know, Burke made a foul and Luka missed a free throw and Porzingis fouled out. But, you know, I think they're acquitting themselves well and trending in the right direction going into the playoffs.
I would agree with all of that.
Before we move on, here's a special offer from our friends at Indochino.
I think it's interesting that I've reflected since our last podcast and just sort of generally about the bubble. This is such a unique situation. And I asked Rick this before the game today, but I didn't get an answer that really his answer didn't really address my question. I think he said, shocking. I like what's, you know, he tried to answer it and then said, if you're asking if I like the games down here, yeah, I think it's great. And they're doing a great job with no fans, putting on atmosphere here and such and such and such. But what I asked him was this. In some way, do these feel like playoff games? Do they feel like regular season games? Or do they feel like neither one of them? Are they just this own really unique entity? Because technically, they're regular season games, and sometimes they feel like that because teams are not really trying real hard at like an end of a regular season game in terms of their rotations and who they're playing and how deep they're going into their bench and resting starters. But then there are times it feels like playoff games, especially because you're playing teams that basically are playing playoff games, in Portland's case tonight, for example, and because there's a hyper-focusedness on the games since we haven't had them in 4 or 5 months to talk about. And so, I don't know. They're just – they're very, very unique.
Well, they're a hybrid because in the regular season, as you know, from being on the road with these guys, there's a monotony. You know, if it's January 15th and you've got 18 games in January and you're in Milwaukee on a Monday night or Detroit, let's say, a team that's not that great, you know, there could be a tendency to kind of walk through a game.
Yeah, the building's going to be maybe 60, 70% full, right. So there's not going to be a lot of energy. You're going to have to, like, you're going to have a hard time generating your energy.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Here with only 8 games and knowing that you're in the playoffs, so you're not playing for your lives, but you're playing for getting yourself, you know, in the right mental and physical shape to play playoff games, it's just a different animal in the regular season in that aspect. But it's not playoff games because it's not balls to the wall every second.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
So it is this hybrid.
Yeah.
But because there's only 8 of them and we're so hungry after 4.5 months of no sports of any kind, not just basketball, we're analyzing everything. And I think the first game being such a kick to the crotch because of the same issue, you know, being brought up that was the Achilles heel before, I think got us all. You know, if they just won by 20 against Phoenix and won through, we would kind of, okay, that's great. Let's go to the next one. But we really dove into that game because it was like the one issue we've always kind of.
And it was such a game statistically that you should win. I mean, you're up 7 with 45 seconds to go. It is near impossible to blow that. And that's what they did that particular night, up 7 with 45 seconds to go. And then, I mean, they completely rewrote Phoenix's bubble story. Phoenix falls off the edge. If at down 81-70 to the Mavs with Booker and Ayton on the bench in game 2, number one, it looks like the Mavs are going to bounce back from the game against Houston. And they're up 11 in the third quarter. And then the Mavs just thought, okay, well, we got this when Booker and Ayton went to the bench. And then the Phoenix bench. Or the Phoenix non-stars. It wasn't all their bench. It was Rubio. It was Cam Johnson. It was a couple of guys off the bench. Kaminsky, Campaign, those guys. Shot Phoenix back into the game. They won the game, and that turned Phoenix's whole bubble experience around. And it didn't completely put the fire out on Dallas moving up to 6, but obviously it was a huge detriment to that.
Well, let's talk playoffs. So give me the 2 seed. Where are we now with, and I want to preface this by saying I want to pre-introduce you by saying I don't think it's defeatist to say we don't want to play the Clippers, because they are the best team in the league. And yes, if you're, you know, wanting to win a title, you're going to have to go through them at some point, but it's just common sense to say that we match up better with Denver than the Clippers. So I don't think going through this kind of hoping for Denver to get two is, you know, being defeatist.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's defeatist in the least. No, not at all. I mean, there's a side of me that relishes the chance that the opportunity that they're probably going to play the Clippers, and I'll explain that more in a minute. And I think I've said this to you before as well, but the situation for the Clippers is this, is that with two games to play, they have a game and a half lead over Denver. So the Clippers and Denver play on Wednesday night. If the Clippers win the game, they're the two seed. If Denver wins the game, then the two seed is in the balance. And on Friday, the Clippers will play Oklahoma City, and Denver will play Toronto.
Toronto has nothing to play for.
Yeah, but that's, of course, what I told you about the Denver Lakers game, and the Lakers played their guys and beat Denver, and Denver didn't play their guys.
And Oklahoma City might have something to play for, not as necessarily the seed. They're still in a 5-6 battle somewhat.
Yeah.
And they've got their top 20 protected first rounder, part of the Laker trade, involved.
Oh, wow. So that's an interesting wrinkle. I hadn't even thought about that.
There, okay. That they may have something to play for.
Interesting. All right. Well, so Denver's got to beat the Clippers on Wednesday, and if they do, then they'd have to beat Toronto Friday, and the Clippers would have to lose to Oklahoma City on Friday. So it could happen. We'll see. We'll see how the whole thing turns out.
That Denver, and you ask why didn't they play Monday night?
Yeah, I was perplexed why they half-assed the game against the Lakers.
Because really, there's no two or three doesn't matter, because it's all about the first round. Excuse me, first round matchup.
Right.
So if they're assuming
there's no home court advantage for the 2-3 team in the second round, so that doesn't matter. Yeah. So they're
all doing like, okay, who do I want to play? Well, the Clippers, I think, don't really care. And now that the Mavs are locked into seven, you know, Denver has had a hard time with the Mavs this year. I think they'd rather play Utah.
Denver has lost twice to Dallas. Mavs beat them very early in the season up there. Mavs beat him, of course, in the memorable game on the season shutdown night when Boban went for 31 points. And then the other game where they played here in January was a thriller that went down to the wire that Dallas had every chance to lead. It's one of the 11 games this year, as a matter of fact, where the Mavericks have had or 10 games, I'm sorry, where the Mavericks have had a lead in the final minute and lost.
So
yeah, Jokic had a big basket late.
You know, we're going through these, but I would be surprised if Denver's, you know, really, other than pride, really trying to win these next two games.
Let me look at the standings. Let me ask you this one. Let me see where they are relative to Houston. And I'm sorry, everyone, that I didn't have.
And Houston's moved up from seventh to fourth in the bubble.
Yeah, let's see.
And
here,
I don't think that Houston can do much. Let's see.
So if Houston were to win their last two games, they would be 46. Yeah, they actually. So Denver does have something to play for, because Denver doesn't want to fall to four.
And Houston has Indiana and Philly on their schedule.
Yeah, and Philly's playing without Embiid and Simmons right now.
Right.
So if Houston won out, Brian, they'd be 46 and 26. And if Denver lost out, they'd be 46 and 27. So Houston could move past Denver into three. So Denver does have
Denver
at least
would play OKC, and that's probably a little bit of a tougher matchup. Now, would they? Than Utah.
Yeah. And I guess I was thinking about the second round, but, maybe they'd rather play the Lakers in the second round. I don't know.
Well,
maybe they
think
that would be better than playing the Clippers.
They would much rather play the Lakers in the second round.
Because
the Lakers only have two players right now. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different permutations, but it looks like, you know, it's going to be the Clippers, and I want to get into what that could look like in a bit, but why don't you give us the 8-9, everything crazy that's now going on with that.
Well, because this does influence, you know, Dallas and Phoenix on Thursday. Dallas doesn't have anything to play for, but in Phoenix's case, they're going to need help. So here's where we stand for 8-9, 10, 11, who are all still alive, Brian. Portland is now 34 and 39. They're eighth. Memphis and Phoenix are tied for ninth at 33-39 after Memphis lost again today to fall to 1-6 in the bubble, and Phoenix won to go to 7-0. They're both 33-39, but Memphis has the tiebreaker over Phoenix because of winning the season series against the Suns. San Antonio is just barely behind them in winning percentage. Let me give you the exact
number. I think
number.
It's like 0.12 or something.
Yeah, 0.0012. Yeah, so those guys are 458, those guys being Memphis and Phoenix, and San Antonio is 457. San Antonio is 32-38, and they are sitting in 11th. So on Thursday, Memphis, this feels like the final day of group stage.
So we have four teams that are essentially tied.
A game apart, or a half game apart now, I guess, because of Portland's win tonight. Yeah, Portland's half game ahead, and then Memphis, Phoenix, and San Antonio are essentially tied.
Right.
So the game's on Thursday. Memphis will play a Milwaukee team that obviously has nothing to play for. Portland will play a Brooklyn team that I believe is locked into 7. Now, Brooklyn did shoot 85% in the first quarter against the Clippers the other night, so beware of that. So Portland and Memphis are the two teams that control their own destiny on Thursday, Brian. And Portland, more importantly, controls their own destiny for 8, which is the much more advantageous place to be than 9 for that play-in tournament. Remember that the 8th seed is a double elimination. The 9th seed is a single elimination. So Portland, again, plays Brooklyn. Memphis will play Milwaukee.
So Portland,
those two teams.
Portland win and they're 8th.
Yes, that's correct.
Right.
Memphis wins, they're 9th. Then other things get introduced into the equation if either one of those two teams lose. Phoenix plays Dallas on Thursday. San Antonio plays Utah. Both of those teams need help to get in to a 8-9 play-in tournament. So it's on Portland and Memphis to take care of business in their games. Portland against Brooklyn, Memphis against Milwaukee.
And the Mavs game is at 3?
Yes, that's correct.
So Phoenix won't know the results of the other games. They clinch 8th with the win over Dallas and a Portland and Memphis loss. They clinch 9th with the win over Dallas and Portland loses or Memphis loses.
Right.
So they will have something definitely to play for. And as we mentioned, the Mavs may not.
Yeah.
So
I'm not feeling good about a Mavs win Thursday afternoon.
No, that's fine. I mean, they're gonna have plenty of time to get ready. So what is the playoff schedule? When do games start?
So Saturday, Sunday, if they have to play 2 games in the playoff tournament, that's when they'll occur.
Yes, 1:30 Saturday is the play-in game.
Yep, and then I think 3:30 or 4:30 or something like that Sunday if they have to play on Sunday. And then you go to, the games will start either Monday or Tuesday.
So 4 games Monday, 4 games Tuesday.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen, and this has not been confirmed, but looking at what the schedule looks like and using a little bit of common sense, there will be 4 series that will be played on the odd number days, the 17th, the 19th, the 21st, the 23rd, the 25th, the 27th, and the 29th. And then there will be 4 series that will be played on the 18th, the 20th, the 22nd, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Saturday, Monday.
Yes. So I would also have to assume, again, which is a dangerous thing to do when it comes to NBA and schedule making for the playoffs, but the Lakers are going to play the winner of the play-in tournament. Since the play-in tournament is going to be on Saturday and potentially Sunday, I think you can pretty much write down the Lakers against the 8th seed as Tuesday.
Exactly.
So I would, again, surmise that the league for scheduling and television purposes would put the other LA team on Monday, right, being the Clippers, of course. So if it's Mavs Clippers, I can't imagine the series wouldn't start on Monday.
I didn't think about that. That's a really good point. Has there been any discussion on when those schedules are announced? In other words, can we just pencil in Lakers for Tuesday, even if the 8th seed wins Saturday and there is no Sunday game? Or are they going to wait till that's done to do it?
I think we can pencil them in for Tuesday because I think given the fact that everybody else is going to get 2 full days off, I mean, there's some teams are going to end Thursday, some are going to end on Friday, and then nobody's going to start the playoffs until Monday. So I think they will do if the 8-9 play-in tournament is only done on Saturday, I think they'll still do that eighth place team a solid.
Because they're not going to want to play back to back to back anyway, and play up, you know, Saturday, Sunday, Monday potentially.
Yeah, yeah. So I think you can pencil in the Lakers playing whomever on Tuesday. And Rick actually said, and somebody asked him today in his pregame media availability, Eddie Sefko, as a matter of fact, asked him, "Is this team ready for the playoffs?" And he said, "We will be. We're not yet, but we will be." And during his answer to that question, he said, "You know, we'll be ready to go. I hear it's going to be Monday."
Yeah.
And he goes, "I don't know that, but I hear it's going to be Monday."
Well, I think the assumption being Clippers, and I would say in terms of timing that would be an 8 o'clock game. Want them to be the prime 8 o'clock matchup.
Sure. Sure. With Luka for Dallas,
the LA teams
and the Clippers
are going to get those
and
8 o'clock slots.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The LA teams are going to get later slots. So it matches up with their market.
Right.
You know, in addition to, you know, still a good viewing time for
the
East Coast and the Central
Time Zone.
They're not
going to want to put the 5:30 slot to the Clippers because then it's 3:30 in California for all those reasons.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And they want the eyeballs, and East Coast can still watch it that hour. So pencil in 8 o'clock Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8 o'clock, and then Sunday.
Or maybe even later than 8. It could be even later. Do you mean 8 o'clock Central, by the way? Yeah, okay, that's probably, 8.
Yes.
At the very latest, 8:30 Central, but probably 8. I don't think that they would ask players to start a game any later than 9 Eastern.
And they haven't done anything past 8 here. And I think that that's, you know, so they've kind of shown what their design is.
Yeah.
And then I think next Sunday would be maybe a 2:30, you know, I think that would be maybe a 2:30. So, you know, kind of, you know, a quicker turn on that one.
Yeah, because that would be an ABC type of broadcast. Yeah, I think that's that. Those are the games. We'll do all the first round games, by the way, on Fox Sports Southwest or TXA 21, depending on how crowded the schedules are relative to Stars and Rangers. But if the game is on ABC, we can't do it. But other than that, we will do all the first round games on Fox Sports Southwest.
We'll do our next week's podcast. Sounds like after game one.
Yeah, sounds like we'll do a Tuesday morning podcast or something like that.
Yeah, Monday night, Tuesday morning, depending on, you'll get it Tuesday morning. So, I mean, that's kind of where things are. Listen, the Clipper, I think something that was brought up by Bob on the ticket, maybe it was with you.
The Athletic's own Bob Stern?
Yes, is that, you know, it getting smacked around by the Clippers, you know, isn't a bad thing if that's what happens, even if you just win one game or whatever, because I think it'll show these guys where they need to go to play hardcore playoff basketball.
Yeah, I mentioned that on one of our post-game shows on the ticket, too. I really do believe that. I mean, look, there's a reason they play the games, and of course, we're, you know, we love the Mavs, and we're going to hope for, you know, a long shot, big upset or something like that. But the Clippers, when healthy, are so deep and so good. They're the best team. I think you're right that they're the best team in the league. So, you know, it's going to be a really, really tough series. But there's, you know, look, Michael Jordan getting swept by the Boston Celtics in 1986 certainly didn't set his career back. Played a memorable series with 63 points in game 2 of that, obviously. And that was his first taste of NBA playoff basketball. And we know how it turned out with things moving forward from there. I think for the Mavs to be up close and personal against a 2-time finals MVP in Kawhi Leonard, a great player in Paul George, a tough player in Patrick Beverley, as annoying as he may be and as much as he gets under your skin, I mean, I think we all understand that Pat Beverley is a playoff basketball kind of guy, and you need a Pat Beverley on your team. We had one in 2011, Deshaun Stevenson, who gets under your skin and is just annoying and talks and defends and plays hard and plays right up against the edge of what some people would consider dirty and that sort of thing. You
and
need that guy on your team.
There's a lot of people who last summer, you know, liked Pat Beverley for this team.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, look, I think we probably all thought on going into free agency that there was a decent chance. Weren't he and Luka like trading emojis on Instagram?
And I think,
during,
you know,
June?
Listen, he's got a
same
significant
agent.
Injury history.
Yeah.
So, you know, that probably played some factor, and he got $14 or $15 million. And I think the Mavs, you know, set their sights on Danny Green, but then
we've mentioned the Clippers and all of their firepower. And we haven't even addressed the fact that they've got two of the three semifinalists for sixth man of the year. They've got a guy who's won it 3 times in Lou Williams, and then Montrezl Harrell. And I would assume, okay, he is back.
Yes.
Yes. I was
he's
about to
in
say,
the bubble. I don't, you know, I think he's clearing quarantine as we speak, and you know, he'll have a week to get into game shape.
Yeah, and that's a really difficult matchup. And we just saw, I mean, not that this is a playoff guy necessarily with experience, but Zubac just went 10 for 10 from the floor in that game against the Mavs last week. And one of the things that I kind of started doing a little bit of research on last night, Brian, you know, as it relates to this matchup with the Clippers and as it relates to what to expect in NBA playoff basketball and why history tells us that you don't, the first time you go in as a young team. I think our thoughts are skewed right now because we see so many veteran groups getting put together. Boston in 2008, the Clippers this year, you know, Golden State loses in the finals and then they add KD to the mix on that. Miami put together the Heatles, of course, and immediately went to four straight finals and winning two of those. So the Last Dance was good to remind us that when you assemble a young team and it builds, it has to go through heartache and getting punched in the face and getting their heads kicked in a couple of times in the playoffs, and that's
LeBron
all part of the learning process.
The Cavs to the playoffs in the second year.
Yeah, that's true. So this is a good thing to start noting about the Mavs and what they have going into the playoffs. Luka obviously has never played in the playoffs. Porzingis has never been in the playoffs. I didn't get a chance to write everybody down on this. Finney Smith, no playoff games. Kleba, no playoff games. Justin Jackson, no playoff games. So here's your playoff experience, Brian. JJ, who's not a rotation guy. Maybe he would get into the rotation in the playoffs. Who knows? But he's not a rotation guy consistently. 49 playoff appearances. Courtney Lee is the most on the team, but obviously he's not playing. 50. He's played in 50 playoff games. JJ's at 49 playoff games. Tim Hardaway Jr. has gone to the playoffs two times and has played in 15 playoff games. Seth Curry has gone to the playoffs once. That was last year with Portland. Did go to the conference finals. Played in 16 playoff games. I think Trey Burke's played in some playoff games. I didn't get a chance to write that down. I think Kid Gilchrist has played in the first round twice. I didn't even write down how many games he's played. DeLon Wright has played in 28 playoff games with Toronto over three seasons, averaging 4.5 points per game. So we're not talking about anybody who's had like really huge minutes in the playoffs. And Boban's got 18 playoff games. He's played. So look at that.
It's a young, inexperienced team.
Collectively, you're getting to about 150 playoff games thereabouts. And, you know, in Kawhi Leonard, a two-time finals MVP, a two-time champion. Paul George has been in deep runs.
Playoff P. Yeah. You know, he's not played well, but he's been there.
He has been with an Indiana team that's made it to the conference finals before, so we certainly can say that about him. And, you know, you have, you know, Lou Williams has been on a lot of playoff teams. Beverly.
The team last year that did take the Warriors to six in the first round, a healthy Warriors team at that point.
Yeah.
You know, surprising them by winning a couple of games and playing them tough. You know,
they've added veterans. I mean, Marcus Morris, you know, he's got playoff experience. Reggie Jackson's got some playoff experience.
There's not going to be any downside to what the Mavs go through. Now, if it is the Denver by some chance, we do have to add that Michael Porter Jr. kind of adds a whole different element to them than what we saw pre-bubble.
True.
That's one thing just to keep in mind. The other thing that really concerns me, not concerns me, but we just have to point out, is while they're getting this experience, you know, this team is thin. You know, if it's essentially six players that I kind of, you know, look at and rely on, and seven if you count Burke.
Mm-hmm.
And if Curry is going to be injured, you're talking about five guys. I mean, so, you know, the second team's going to have to do something, and that's why we like to see them have some run in Utah game and in this Phoenix game coming up, because the DeLon Wrights of the world and the, you know, if MKG does need to give some run and whoever, you know, they're going to have to at least tread water
mm-hmm.
when they're in there.
I don't know if we're going to see. I'm kind of wondering if this is going to be – I mean, Porzingis and Luka are going to be playing 40 minutes a game. Is it going to be real limited minutes for anybody after you get past the top seven? You got to assume if you're going to go with your starting five, and then Kleba and Burke will get fairly significant minutes off the bench. And then I feel like, I mean, at this point, Wright and Jackson, unless if you're going to bring Boban in as a lane clogger if they're running a lot of pick and rolls and Zubats is hurting you inside like he was last week.
Yeah, you know, Jackson, I don't think he's earned any playoff minutes the way he's been playing.
Yeah.
And DeLon, you know, as you guys have mentioned on the broadcast, looks tentative out there. So I wouldn't have any problem with
that. How many open shots is he passing up?
Yeah, he's just tentative. Yeah. So I don't have any problem with having a seven-man rotation, you know, going forward. And one thing to keep in mind, so there's no back-to-backs. It's every other day. But there's no travel, right? You're just taking a bus and you're going back to your room. That, as you know from traveling, that's a lot of wear and tear that's gone.
Right. That is true. It's a good point.
So, you know, playing every other day, and listen, those off days, they're not going to be running around. They're going to be just kind of grinding through film and walking through things. So there should be...
Off days will be film sessions, and if you didn't play a lot of minutes, you'll get on the floor.
Right.
Yeah, the low-minute guys will have, you know, 3-on-3 and things like that. The low-minute guys or the no-minute guys, whomever they are, will get out on the floor. But if you're in this top 7-minute guys, the five starters and Cleveland Burke, who we think will get significant minutes, you won't do much on those off days. Yeah.
So the reason I say that is because you mentioned, you know, high minutes possibly for Luka and KP. I wouldn't look at that as they're going to get tired out because of the fact that, you know, there's no travel and it's every other day and it should be that should be manageable.
Yeah. Yep. And look, if you're going to eventually play, if you're going to go on deep runs into the playoffs, you're going to have to play tired. Yeah. You're going to have to play heavy minutes and a lot of playoff games over a lot of series and high intensity games and playing 40-ish minutes multiple times if you're going to win a championship, if you're going to go on a run like that. So you might as well get ready for it now.
If they play Monday, that's going to be, you know, 7 days since this game and kind of a walkthrough scrimmage game essentially for them Thursday.
Right.
Which is not much. It's probably good to get the blood going a little bit. So they'll be rested going into that.
Right. I think you're spot on there.
Well, we are almost there, buddy.
Yeah.
Almost to playoff basketball. If you have anything else here as we wrap up.
Well, I mean, I have like pages and pages of things, as you know, with my prep. Is there anything, let's see, let me look here and toss some numbers out to you from how this season is winding down. This is going to be the most wins, Brian, since the 2014-15 season when Dallas won 50. They made the playoffs in 15-16, but only won 42 games.
So their
games
record
that
now
year.
Is what?
43-31 after today.
And they're obviously going to be 7 shy from finishing out 82.
Right.
So they, if you put them at even 4-3, that's 47 wins.
17-24 in clutch games. We'll see if they have one more clutch game into the mix. But the, as you know, and as your stats have chronicled, I'm going by the NBA clutch definition of within 5 in the final minutes. When you drill down farther and look at the last 2 minutes, and it's a one-possession game, as you've noted many times in our recent conversations, the winning percentage and numbers are quite worse.
And this was a pure definition of a clutch game because at 4:59, when there was a timeout call, the score was tied. I mean, it was about as clutch as it can get.
Let's see. The Mavs will wind up this year as the number one rated offense of all time.
Wow. No matter what.
Yeah, there's no way it's going to fall off enough on Thursday. I mean, if they could play
they could score
Antonius
points.
Cleveland and Josh Reeves the 48 minutes on Thursday, and that's not going to happen.
Throw you out there for a few runs.
They could throw Followill and 49-year-old Followill and Damaris out there, and we'll still get through it.
Could I score a point against Phoenix, who's playing for their playoff lives? Can I just even snowbird, like just 4-on-5 Vivek Rundeep style?
I'm trying to think of who is like the weak link defensively on their team. Yeah, I mean, Booker, I mean, you would be giving up like 60 to Booker on the other end, like 80. Booker scored 70 once. So you would be giving up 80 points to Booker, but maybe he would just like not give a crap, and maybe you would score like one time against
him. I think
him.
I said this before in this podcast. I do remember challenging Steve Nash when I was working for the Mavs.
Yeah.
I just said, hey, D me up like you would D up a guy, you know, in a game. And Nash was not known for his defense, mind you.
I love this story, by the way.
And I, you know, I acted like I was getting a ball in the post, and he was bodying me and just, I mean, he was throwing me around like a rag doll, all legal moves. And I was just, and I ended up trying to dream shake, and I threw it up against the side of the backboard a la Tim Hardaway in tonight's game. And like, I mean, I was so rattled, and this was like, and he was probably a quarter speed, like he was just in practice mode. So if you don't think that these guys are just playing all out physical, then yeah, you got another thing coming.
But they will end up on a serious note about that. They will end up as the number one offense in the league, in league history from an offensive efficiency standpoint. Now look, some of that is, Brian, that they take a lot of threes. They join the Houston Rockets, who've done it several seasons in a row now. But the Mavs joined the Houston Rockets as the only teams to ever average more than 43-point attempts per game in a season. The Mavs have established a new team record for threes attempted in a season and did it in the game against Utah on Monday afternoon. And so they did it in game, 73 or whatever.
So what are we averaging as a percentage of our total shots from three?
Attempt-wise? That I don't have for you, but it's probably about 45%. I mean, maybe I might be off by a couple of percentages, but basically they're taking 41 threes, and I think the Mavs are attempting about 90 field goal attempts a game. So 45, 46
and
percent,
let's be honest,
in there.
It's probably going to keep going up.
Yes, for the Mavs and for a lot of other teams as well. So a lot of threes, a good percentage on threes, a slightly above league average percentage, which going into play today, Dallas was 36.6% this year on threes. That's 10th in the league. You know, they boosted it up a little bit based on what they shot on threes tonight.
Remember last year, weren't they fourth in attempts and really towards the bottom in makes?
That's exactly right. Yep, they were fourth in attempts and like 25th. In percentage or something like that. So,
oh, here you go. And top bubble performers. If you're trying to do an all bubble team, Luka has the looks like the third best average in points.
Wow,
below Booker and Harden.
And they don't turn it over very much too. That's another thing, by the way, that contributes to the fact that they'll have the number one offensive rating in NBA history. So it's low turnovers, and it's just the fact that they shoot a lot of threes and they make so many threes. They shoot a better percentage than Houston does, who takes even more threes. So, just a few numbers from this season as we kind of wind it down. I'm trying to think if there's anything else here that looks interesting. The Mavs in, I want to say it's like, 8 of the last 9 or 9 of the last 10 years have finished in the bottom 5 in the league in second chance points. This year, the Mavs are going to end up second or third. They're third going into today's game, going into the penultimate game of the year. So that is a really different thing with the Mavs this year that they've gotten so many second chance
points. I'd love for somebody to ask Rick that at some point, because I don't think that, you know, and as we know, offensive rebounding is kind of this controversial analytical stat. I don't think they're, you know, coaching him to crash the boards. They still want to get that transition D, because we have a terrible transition D still. We give up the most fast break points in the league. Mm-hmm. So we're not consciously...
The Lakers actually wrested that spot away from us. Okay. We're 29th now. Woo!
Wow, fantastic. So I don't know that they're making a concerted effort. They're just getting their hands on more of them, right? I don't know. Maybe they are coaching that. I have to ask. But
I think that there is more of an effort. Based on some conversations that I have had, there is more looking at offensive rebounds. There's a feeling that rather than just dropping people back as they did with an older, less athletic team as they've had in the past few years, that they felt like we have to just drop people back to have any semblance of a transition defense. Now the idea is, number one, long shot, long rebound. So there's just more scrambles.
You saw a couple of those in crunch moments. Yep. Finney Smith getting a key one late in the game against the Blazers.
Yeah, so you're talking long shot, long rebound, more opportunity for offensive rebound. But there is more of a commitment, because the feeling actually is that their transition defense is a little bit better when you commit to offensive rebounding, because that occupies players for defensive rebounding purposes for the other team rather than just release. So they have, to what percentage, I certainly wouldn't hazard a guess, but there has been a evolution in philosophy of let's commit a little bit more energy to the offensive glass. And then some of it is just they've got Finney Smith, who's a really good offensive rebounder. They've got a 7'3 Porzingis, a 7'4 Boban. They have people who are just naturally big bodies and big presences from an offensive rebound standpoint. And again, long shot, long rebound. Finney Smith gets those. Luka gets those. They're just a bigger, stronger team now, and that's why they're a much better overall rebounding team and offensive rebounding team, and thus second chance points team for the first time in years. So those
Harrison Barnes, one or two rebound the games are gone and replaced. Okay, good.
That's certainly changed things. So, you know, those are, you know, a lot of prep goes into the broadcast, and sometimes these things are kind of hard to work in. So just thought I'd hit you with a few of these here. And, you know, I don't know that I have any individual ones that just stand out. Maybe we'll cover those at like at a season end podcast or something like that. But that's a few things for the end of the regular season, just in kind of how this whole year is shaped up for Dallas, which is going to end, Brian, at either 44-31 or 43-32 through 75 games. Oh, I do have an individual one. I'm sorry. I do have one to give you. Have I told you this one about Kleba? Have you heard what I said about this?
No. As he was referenced today on the TNT broadcast, Moxie Kleba.
Well, Maxie Kleba.
I think was called a B.A., if you get my
yeah, I do.
By
Whiteside or Anthony?
Whiteside.
Okay.
But he and Anthony were drawn, too.
Yes, yes. Double technicals, as a matter of fact. So some of this is just weird math and the weird nature of this season. But this I think is really cool. Maxie, whenever he steps on the floor against the Phoenix Suns on Thursday, will assure that he will play 74 games this year. He will be the only player to reach 74 games because the other team, Atlanta, that had played 67 games didn't go to the bubble. So the Mavs have played more games than any other team in the league this year. And Maxie had only missed one game. So, you know, some weird math and the goofy nature of the COVID shutdown and the pandemic are contributing to this. But the record will show that once Kleba takes the floor Thursday, the 2019-20 season will end. And the sole leader in the league in games played is going to be Maxie. And I do think that there is, even though weird math has contributed to that, I think it's a cool story, only just from knowing the fact that Kleba was brought here, and he was a very much off-the-radar European professional player because he had dealt with a lot of injuries in his time that he played in Spain and played at Bayern Munich in Germany. So he had struggled to maintain consistent health in his early to mid-20s in Europe, was very much off the radar. Being from Würzburg, obviously, was one of the biggest pluses that he had to get him here in the first place, Brian. And he came here, and the idea was, man, we're always going to have to watch this guy. And
limit his minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Never going to be able to give this guy a real heavy workload because his body just can't handle it. Well, number one, he's come here, and more importantly than anything, and this is a credit to him for putting in the work, and it's a credit to Casey Smith, the Mavs director of player performance, and to Deion Calhoun, now their athletic trainer, and their strength and conditioning staff has played a major role in this too. Jeremy Holsoppel and Casey Spangler and those guys. And Maxie has discussed this. They have worked with him. They have worked with him to remake his body. They have worked with him in terms of plyometrics to make him a better shot blocker in terms of his jumping ability. And his body can withstand things now that I think they felt like looking at him when they brought him over, oh, he'll never be able to do the things that he does as a player and handle the workload of playing, you know, the most games in the league and playing 25, 26 minutes a night, which is where he is. So the record is going to show that Kleba is going to have a little piece of history from this season. And I think that's pretty cool. And it's a testament to the work that he's done and the supervision and the nature of the program that the strength and conditioning guys for the Mavs have put in place for him to remake his body and be in a position to have a season like that. So that's a neat story to me.
And I like that he, you know, doesn't take any crap from Melo and gives it right back to him.
I mean, there was a good replay of that scene tonight where Melo said something to him and Kleba had just like the most dismissive facial look.
Yeah, he gave him the hand wave of like, get out of here, punk.
Yeah.
And I guess that was, he must have said some kind of magic word that got him a tee because that's all I saw was kind of the wave off, but they teed them both up.
Yeah.
So he must have said something. And usually, and I know you're calling these remotely, but people there heard it, so because it's so quiet in the arena.
Oh, so that's my good individual Mav note. We'll have some others whenever the season winds up when we do our post playoff podcast, whenever that may be. But the next one, I guess, is going to be in the midst, probably between games 1 and 2 of the series against whomever it's going to be, either the Clippers or the Denver Nuggets.
Yes, most likely a Monday night game, and we'll have a Tuesday morning podcast. So playoff basketball is upon us, and it's a good time. So we will see you next week.
Oh, my God! Oh! Oh, oh, oh. a wrap.